Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at DunbarLumber.com. Tune in on Trade Deadline Day to Sportsnet 650's coverage, brought to you by AJ's Pizza on East Broadway in Mount Pleasant. Try AJ's traditional New York pizza or sink into their famous Detroit pizza only at AJ's Pizza. Order online at ajs.pizza. And have confirmed that Dom Shermati put the hustle in, and we're going to get some pizza on trade deadline day. So shout out to Dom for making sure that that's going to be provided for us. The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call. We now go to the Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning hotline, where we are joined from The Athletic by Shayna Goldman. Shayna, thank you for doing this. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. So lots to get into. We want to talk about the Canucks trade deadline around the league. But in New Jersey, Lindy Ruff dismissed yesterday Travis Green, the new interim head coach for the Devils. And, you know, the Devils, I think, a pretty popular pick to be a really good team coming into the season. There's been injuries. There's been goaltending problems. There's been general inconsistency. From a coaching perspective, what do you think needs to change to kind of salvage this season for New Jersey?
Well, okay. The coaches can't control the goaltenders, right? They didn't create this tandem, and they can't make them stop pucks. But I think saying that's the only problem is New Jersey is too short-sighted. I think we saw this trend start in the playoffs, especially in round two last year, where the Devils were falling behind in games when they should have had, you know, a little bit more jump to go into it. And that really continued this season. You see, they've allowed the first goal 44 times this season and only scored it once 17 times. Like, that's a game management problem if your team's not ready to play 60 minutes. And again, yes, it would help to have that timely save, but it's so much more than that. You can just see up and down the lineup that it felt like they weren't maximizing players. And it's not just the young guys, the Holtzes of the world. You saw players like Dawson Mercer stumble, and, you know, he was playing third line half the year, and he wasn't even playing center there, which to me is a red flag. If he's playing wing, it has to be top six. If he's a third, he's on the third line, he has to drive his own line. And, you know, you have other issues like Timo Meier wasn't being maximized. His minutes have been iffy. He really hasn't played with Nico Hischier much. When those combinations, we know he clicks in. So, and then you saw players like John Marino and Jonas Siegenthaler just completely struggle. So a new coach, you know, Travis Green has come in and find a way to help guys bounce back who were so good last year. And obviously you can expect some sort of regression, but not to this extent. They have to find a way to rebalance the top nine to have more scoring, because here they are, a team that can create chances and not finish them. Or the power play has been inept for months again. So there's definitely a lot of work to do there. And then you still want to develop the young players, the Nemeches of the world and the Luke Hugheses and the Holtzes. And it's getting off to an interesting start with Nemeche already looking like he's going to be a healthy scratch. And I think he's been one of the better defenders this whole year. So they need some help so their goaltenders aren't as exposed, and that they can give their goalies more goal support until management can fix that problem.
Yeah, and it's you know, we see really good teams make coaching changes all the time in the NHL, right? Just look at Edmonton and the streak they've gone after bringing in Knobloch. But it's so late in the year for New Jersey, like literally the same week as the trade deadline. And of course, they've got a really interesting decision to make on Tyler Toffoli, because, you know, obviously they're making this change. They want to push for the playoffs. They want to try to do damage there, and Tyler Toffoli could really, really help that. But there's so much uncertainty of if they'll even be able to make the playoffs in the first place, let alone be in a position to go on a run. I mean, what do you think they should do with Toffoli just a few days out from the deadline here?
You know what? I don't think it's the worst idea to keep him, because I feel like he is something they need. I could see them re-signing him for a year and it making sense, because they need someone who can finish their chances, and he's pretty good at that. So I feel like he brings, you look at, I don't want to say so many of their forwards have similar skill sets, but they bring something similar to the table. And the fact that they have so much of that works for them, but you need people who do different things. And that's where a Toffoli stands out to me. And that's where a Mercer stands out to me too, because they do different things than Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier and Jesper Bratt. You want to have a little more versatility in your forward group. I think they should have made this decision sooner. And I know it's so easy to say. I think they could have made it after last year's postseason, because I disagreed with so much of how the team was, you know, managed. And you saw the impact of Andrew Burnett there after the forwards and power play struggled for so long. They got it right, and then they let him walk. I think that was mistake number one. I feel like they just let this go a little too far. And that Kings game, you could see in that second period when they started having those breakdowns, it was like, it's happening. You just felt it, like, that's happening tomorrow. They're definitely making a coaching change. So now you have to try to salvage it. I guess what they can hope to do is that they can put the pieces together to have a strong end to the year. And I think that might be the right path to take, right? Don't bottom out. Don't necessarily buy unless you can get a goaltender that's going to help you for more than just this year. And it'll benefit you more now to, you know, bring them in versus over the summer. And try to lay a foundation for next year. If you happen to make the playoffs and get back to where you should be, someone falls out and you get lucky, especially if you see Philly start selling, I think that they're in a really intriguing spot. But I don't think you just suddenly drop everything and go for it. I don't think they're there yet. But, you know, you kind of look at the Canucks last year and you look at how they made a coaching change. And it was a lot sooner because it was the end of January. But they laid a foundation for them for this year. So it wasn't, you know, clean slate in the summer and start from there. So I think that could be good for them. But, it, you know, it's not just fully in their control at this point. And that's because they blew so many opportunities earlier this year.
Yeah, Shane, I mean, on the one hand, the Canucks set the foundation and then have gone off this year. On the other hand, on the very last days of the season, game 82, the way the results fell, dropped the Canucks from the Michkov spot to the Vilander spot, right? Like, it's one of those things that's tough to wait.
Yeah, but you know what? They've had so many top picks, and that's the thing. That's why I think they're in such a unique position. You look at how many top five picks they've had in recent years,
right?
And who's headlining their lineup, that they're one of the few teams that I think can afford that. If they end up in the middle and don't get something great out of it, it's not a backbreaker. Any other team, like, we look at, say, the St. Louis Blues, right?
Yes.
The difference for them between pick number 13 and one is massive, because they don't have a single player like that on their roster. Like, they're a team that it needs to be realistic and needs to just fall off of it so they can get better. I don't think that's the case for the Devils. I don't think they need to do that.
Travis Green, we know him well in this market. I'm still holding some Travis Green as a decent coach stock.
Absolutely.
So it's been distressed for several years. And to be honest with you, I don't know that this is the best spot for him to come into, given the short amount of road left here, given the goaltending issues. What are your thoughts on the hire? What are your thoughts on his first morning skate lineup?
I think so the fact that they went with him, it felt like when he was hired, that was the potential person to take over for Lindy Ruff if they made a coaching change. The same as it was Andrew Burnett last year, right? So I keep looking at it going, you had your guy, had you just been a little more proactive. And I do think this is a bit of a downgrade for the roster they have. You know, just who would have been a better fit. He's in a really unfortunate spot, though, because, you know, in some ways he's not a fresh face, even though this is year one, and he hasn't necessarily done things. But you'll see, like, it's totally different. Sometimes we don't know how much influence an assistant coach has, truly, right? And I think with the Devils, the fact that last year was so good after they made swaps for both of their leading assistant and associate coaches, like, that made such a difference that they were able to keep Lindy on that extra year. And I think it's a little bit different now. So we'll see. Does someone else come in now to work with the forwards and the power play and take up the role that Travis Green had before? Like, I think that would be nice. At least you get one more fresh face in there. His first morning skate, though, it was interesting to hear the Tom Fitzgerald quote about not just stapling a player to the bench if you want them to develop versus doing exactly that with Nemec night one, when I don't think he is the guy to bench at all. If you're not vying for points, right, if these games didn't matter for the Devils, I would say bench him just to see what you have in everyone else. You'd be confident what you have in him. I think at this point, that is not the case. You need these points. So I would want one of my better defenders in the lineup day one, but that's just me personally. And, you know, what do I know?
Around the league, we're just a few days away now from the trade deadline, and we're seeing reports out there from Darren Dreger that the Penguins, they're in sell mode, and they don't want to wait until Friday to get a Jake Guentzel deal done. They want to do it, per Dreger, by tomorrow night, if possible. Which team out there do you think should really be prioritizing, you know, meeting the asking price and going and getting Guentzel?
I personally love that report. Kind of say, like, put that out there now. Don't wait till those last-minute offers, because if they don't like them, you know, their hands are tied. Put a little more pressure on it to get those offers sooner than later. I think a lot of teams should be in on him. I mean, first and foremost, I guess the Vegas Golden Knights could use a winger, and they sure have the cap space. They're probably number one for me. But he's such a good player. I think he would be a fit literally anywhere he goes. Would he make the Rangers look a lot better because they could use a first-line right wing? Absolutely. Would he make Vegas better because they have injuries and their forward group is weaker than it was last year? You know, completely and totally yes. Could a team like Winnipeg use another good scoring forward so they get a little bit more oomph in their offensive group? Of course. Carolina, we talk about every year needing that. They're another team he would make sense for. Like, it's nice when there's actual high-end talent available because it's so different than everybody racing for the one third liner. I think Guentzel and Buchnevich are the two players that every team, unless your forward group is perfect, and most aren't, you should be trying to get.
In terms of, like, which team of the three Pacific Division teams, because we think that all of Vegas, Edmonton, and Vancouver love the player, which team would be scariest to add him to the lineup?
Oof. That is tough. You know, it's like they're all scary in different ways, right? Because he has the finishing talent to kind of extend what the Canucks are already doing so well. We know they can finish their chances. They have so many different scoring threats. Like, he would add to that. Jake Guentzel in a top six with Leon Draisaitl, Zach Hyman, and Connor McDavid. Like, are you kidding? It would knock someone down like Evander Kane to a more rightful position. It feels like they really could use one more winger since Connor Brown hasn't worked out. But there's something about Vegas I do really like, because Vegas has that potential to have those three really threatening lines again that no one could stack up to last year. And I think they need one more forward since losing Riley Smith. And obviously, these are two night and day different players. But if you can bring him into the fold and carry that on where you have just three deep lines that few teams can measure up to, I mean, I think they have a huge shot then with that. So I think the scariest might be Vegas, because I think Vegas has something already that other teams don't. Like, they have all those matchup potential players between, like, their two really good shutdown centers and, you know, their defense. Like, why not?
So I don't know if our listeners necessarily know this, but you should be following Shayna on Twitter, especially at this time of year, because A, she breaks some stuff, and B, she has one of the greatest bits going in hockey reporting, which is that you do Gossip Girl soliloquies summarizing rumors, things you're hearing, and also the trades after they happen with the XOXO sign-off. It kills me every year. Just going to pitch something to you, Shayna. Do not feel obligated to agree to participate if you don't want to. But I was thinking, could I read off 10 names at the top of most trade boards, and let's do, not necessarily reporting, informed guesses, mostly just for fun, predictions on where each player lands. We'll join you too, so it's not just putting you out on a limb, and then we can discuss it. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go.
It'll you know, get a little ready for the rest of the week, because, like, to figure out this stuff on the fly is, like, what it's all about, right? Like, a trade happens and I'm scrambling to come up with, like, like, who should be queen bee here and who's a little so yes, let's get warmed up.
All right. So I will use Chris Johnston from The Athletic, his trade board, because, of course, you and I are good soldiers. Shayna.
We got to pat ourselves on the back for being there, of course.
Yeah, and so I'm going to skip Tyler Toffoli because I feel like we already discussed him, and start instead with Pavel Buchnevich. And, of course, we can also predict that he doesn't get moved.
Mm.
So you can also feel free to pick any guy's current team as well. We'll lead off with you, Shayna, and then we can go.
it's like I know who would be the best fit for him, but I don't think, like, are we going where I think he lands or where I think he should land?
Why don't you go where you think he'll land, but then also feel free to caption it with where you think he should land.
Okay, I feel like he's the kind of forward the Carolina Hurricanes are going to try to go for. I think the Rangers should outspend them every shot they get because I think he's exactly what that first line's missing. And, oh, they know what the first line looks like with him, too.
Am I doing Buchnevich, too?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going Vegas.
Yeah,
I think they miss out on Gensel. They go second year in a row, big Russian winger from St. Louis, and they go get Buchnevich.
I'm with you. I like Vegas for Buchnevich, but I love the Carolina fit. I think
that's a good one.
I could see them being aggressive. Vladimir Tarasenko.
Oof. He's having an interesting year. Let's go with Edmonton. No. You know what? I take it back. See, now I want to say Carolina for him because I think he'd okay a trip to Carolina after almost landing there.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Since he has control, it's not going to be Edmonton. I'm going to say Florida.
Interesting.
I'm going to say Dallas.
I'm going L.A. I like him in L.A. I feel finishing like some of their chances.
Jim Neal loves his like name guys a little
totally
bit past
does.
Their prime.
Yep, and he's had good success with that with Matt Duchene. Alexander Wennberg, already been pulled from lineups, Shayna. Feels like a Rangers trade target. Is he a Rangers trade target?
Absolutely, yes. I think that a team like Boston is going to focus their assets elsewhere and not go for the center. I think he's the one center the Rangers can actually afford.
Yeah, I'll go Rangers.
Yeah, Rangers. Clean sweep. Frank Vatrano. Frank the Tank.
You know what? I think he stays in Anaheim. I don't think anyone matches the price Rubik's looking for, and he moves Henrique instead. Only Henrique.
I'm with you. I think Jamie is too. I don't
sure.
speak for you, although I just did. and then we move on to Adam Henrique, who I think we all think is moving. Is this going to be a Colorado clean sweep?
That's what I was going to say. Colorado or Boston would be my two.
Mm.
Yeah, those are definitely like those are the two teams that you go. Okay, they could use a center.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess they'll take Adam Henrique. The other ones are off the board.
I mean, I don't think he's a center is the problem that those teams are going to bump into. Sean Walker.
Tampa Bay.
Ooh, I love that fit for them.
Jimmy? I like that. Sean Walker. I'll go Dallas.
I think
they already got Tanev, so I don't know. I'll go Tampa Bay, too.
I'm a big Sean Walker fan.
Yeah, me too. I'm going Edmonton. I actually want to talk about Sean Walker really quickly because Ilya Mikheyev is getting crushed in this market. 12 months removed from a surgery to repair his ACL. And one thing I'm increasingly hearing from executives around the league, but also observing myself, is if you give a player time to get healthy, a la Jack Eichel, a la Patrick Kane, and Sean Walker might be actually the most active example going, man, it's amazing what can happen 12 months after an ACL, especially if they're not like a Malkin, Brock Nelson quality, big-bodied shooting forward or scoring forward, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think everyone's a little bit impatient. I feel like a team like the Flyers was the perfect fit for him to get his game going under, like, Tortorella and Bradshaw. Like, I think it was so perfect for him.
Yeah, it's been awesome to see. Noah Hanifin, we buy in Tampa Bay?
All right, since I'm saying Sean Walker to Tampa Bay, I'm going to go Noah Hanifin to Boston.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm riding with Noah Hanifin to Florida. I think they're going to swoop in and steal him from their in-state rivals.
I'm really nervous if Florida does that because I don't think they can live without Gustav Forsling, and anything that takes cap space out of their sort of war chest for the summer, like Reinhardt and Gustav Forsling, are indispensable to me.
Yeah.
So unless they got Forsling done beforehand, I would probably pan a Hanifin ad. Anyway, Jacob Markstrom?
Nowhere. didn't the owner nix a trade?
Yep. Or at least that's what Sarah Vallier
That's what's been reported, yeah.
Yeah, I think he ends up on the Devils. I just don't know if it's now or in the summer.
Yeah, that feels right to me. Last thing here. Shayna, do you think Green coming you cited the Vancouver model, right? The idea that you give a coach some time to implement his systems, you spend the summer and it's not exactly blank slate time, tabula rasa in the at training camp. Do you think Green has a shot at retaining this job here? Is this a better opportunity perhaps than it looks like on the surface.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's tough because, like, we really don't know who will be available this summer. Like, say Mike Sullivan is available. I think everybody will be going through Mike Sullivan, but I don't think he should be available. I think, you know, you're going to look at potential assistants who could become available. Like, I would assume someone like Todd Reirden is available, right, if they're this season in Pittsburgh. I would go for Travis Green over him, stick with what you already know versus that. I just wonder how much they go for experience there because the team is young and inexperienced that I don't think that they go for the next up-and-coming coach, honestly. Even though, like, they could, I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't think that happens.
Shayna, really appreciate it. That was fun. Looking forward to hopefully an eventful deadline. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having me.
That was Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. And yeah, just on Travis Green, obviously a Canucks relevant piece of news there with him taking over as the interim head coach. It is such a weird position because, you know, Shayna references Rick Tocchet, but of course that was an outside voice coming in. And also the team had zero expectations whatsoever. It wasn't about, hey, let's go on a playoff run. It was explicitly, let's try to lay the foundations here for next season when we're really going to be trying to be competitive. We don't really care too much about the results for the rest of this season. That's very different than the also he was not the interim, right? He was hired as the new head coach. It's very different than promoting the assistant to interim head coach when you're still probably trying to make the playoffs, but you also might sell. It's just a very weird situation, atypical, I would say, for a coach taking over in the NHL, right? Where you're taking over this late in the season for a team that is expected to go on a run. You're not being brought in from outside, so it's not a totally new voice. It's just a lot of factors that kind of, I think, make it a tough spot for Green.
Yeah, I agree with you. My gut reaction was...
Now, having said that...
Not ideal.
There's upside there, too. Like, this team could easily get hot and make the playoffs... That could be great for him.
And there's organizational upside in that the Harris Group is a more data-driven ownership group than almost any you'll find in sports. And Green tends to be, pretty curious about that side of the game. So, I mean, maybe there's more there than meets the eye. But my gut reaction when I saw the news yesterday was like, oh, that's bad for the stock I'm holding.
The Nemich thing is fascinating, too. Just not that it's like... beyond the pale to scratch him or whatever, but it's just, as Shayna said, it's just funny coming in conjunction with the Tom Fitzgerald quote of like, you don't have to scratch a guy to help him develop, and
yeah.
Travis Green's like, watch me.
Lengthy explanation though from Green talking about how he's lost some jump in his stride. Reading between the lines, it sounded to me like Green maybe thought he needed some rest, like maybe he was wearing down. So I don't know. I mean, the overall, like the forward line scramble that they did feels very Green to me, where it's like, you know exactly which line he's going to feed to Tufts, and it's the Heischer line. You know exactly that he's going to try and move Jack Hughes around the lineup to get him some softer minutes. He's created this sort of fourth line that he'll be comfortable, you know, killing in terms of zone starts with Curtis Lazar and Mercer. And then he's kind of got all his sheltered scoring guys on the fourth line, including Alexander Holtz. I mean, the forward line combos immediately just like screamed Green to me. And the Nemich thing was baffling, but I suspect rest, like rest related, more sort of a big picture view thing than a
like you're hurting us out
than
there,
a you're not one of my six best D decisions.
All right. I mentioned the report on Jake Guentzel from Darren Dreger about the timeline on that from the Penguins' point of view. Some information on what they're looking back there as well. You know, there was a lot of stuff in terms of trade deadline reports that we didn't have a chance to get into during the whiteboard. So we can do that next. Talk about Guentzel. Some other winger targets that could be legitimate in-play options for the Canucks if Guentzel doesn't work out. Text in as well, 650-650.
As Shayna would say, XOXO.
XOXO, indeed. We'll do that and more up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whoa. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's trade deadline week, so that means there is a lot to keep up with as it relates to rumors and reports, potential targets, guys who could be available, who might not be available. As mentioned, the latest on, I would say, the top name on the market now, Jake Guentzel from the Penguins, the latest per Darren Dreger. Sources say the Penguins are hoping to have a trade in place for Jake Guentzel by tomorrow evening. Pittsburgh is open to quality over quantity in return, but would like a first young NHL player plus prospects. And he says flexibility comes in the caliber of prospects or roster players. Your athletic colleague, Chris Johnson, also saying that it doesn't sound like extension talks are going to factor into this. Whoever acquires them is going to be acquiring them as a UFA. Maybe they talk extension post-trade, but it doesn't sound like there's going to be a chance for teams to get an extension done before Friday's deadline.
Teams will probably have a sense, though, in making the deal, whether or not they've got a shot.
Right.
You know, like whether or not it's likely. That'll be priced in differently, even if it's not, you know. Look, it didn't prevent the Canucks from getting full value for Bo Horvat.
No.
You know?
Yeah, because they knew, okay, well, this is likely what it's going to take. We'll go get it done.
Honestly, it's usually in the player's favor, too. I mean, Guentzel profiles a little bit more like a pure rental than Horvat did, but you get traded to a team who pays up big for you. I mean, that's leverage.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's leverage for you either way. So, anyway, that wouldn't change the dynamic from a Vancouver Canucks perspective, for example. They do a Guentzel deal without an extension in place. They're still going to feel pretty good about their chances of keeping him.
Right, exactly, especially in the Canucks situation because they have that familiarity built in. As I said on the show yesterday, even if they don't get him at the deadline, I wouldn't be surprised if they're checking in and potentially chasing him come the summer if he's still UFA at that point. Now, on Guentzel, of course, we've heard Vancouver's name explicitly connected. I think it was Pierre LeBrun yesterday saying Vegas and Vancouver, two of the six-plus teams with legit interest. You know, I know Rick Dhaliwal earlier today was saying it's going to be tough for the Canucks to get Guentzel done because other teams have much deeper prospect pools. And if you're kind of ruling out Vilander, Lekkerimäki, and even Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, from the conversation, from a potential Guentzel return, you know, you start looking at what Darren Dreger laid out as the pretty familiar formula for a top rental, a first, a young NHL player, plus prospects. So if you do your 2025 first, maybe that's interesting to the Penguins because they say, hey, okay, Canucks are doing great this year, but maybe they're due for a little bit of a fall off next year. Maybe you get the Penguins to bite on that. Young NHL player, have to be Hoglander at that point.
You'd and then certainly
filler,
hope not.
Filler prospects?
You'd hope not, right? I mean, the problem is if you...
And so how much...
You're better if you replace...
Of course.
Hoglander with Guentzel today, I think.
But you've still opened up a hole in your lineup.
Well, and are you better in 3 years... You know, versus where Hoglander will be at his cap dollar, given that he's still going to be an RFA.
Versus what you're going to sign Jake Guentzel to, potentially.
And he'll be 31, 32 at that point. You know, also, to some extent, that upgrade is mitigated by the loss of Hoglander.
Exactly. You're opening up a hole elsewhere in your lineup, right?
Yeah.
Which is not to say that you can't do it, depending on what the other price is, but that's a lot to give up. When, you know, one of this team's strengths at different points this year has been forward depth.
Mm.
If you do that trade, you're upgrading the top of your lineup, but you're also chipping away more at your forward depth. And we've seen that tested here recently, right? With Dakota Joshua out of the lineup, with Ilya Mikheyev's cold streak, you know, even Lindholm, you were taking Andre Kuzmenko out of the lineup and bringing Lindholm in. They've traded Anthony Beauvillier this year. Like, the forward depth has steadily become less and less of a strength to the point where I think it has to be a real consideration, right? If you're doing that type of trade, if you're taking a forward off of your roster to upgrade in the top six, that scares me a little bit, what you're leaving the bottom six with at that point.
You also have to be mindful of the fact that Hoglander at $1.1 million next year, I mean, that's vital as you weigh decisions on a variety of other key players. in this team's lineup who will be expiring, right? I mean, that's how do you offset the loss of all those guys? Well, Hoglander at 1.1, you know, Pew Suter at 1.6, man, you got to be really protective of those players.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. We had the discussion yesterday about could Garland feature in it? Well, then again, you're just opening up a really significant hole in your lineup, right? And I love Jake Guentzel. I absolutely love Jake Guentzel as a player, as a fit for this team, what he could do for the top six, perfect skill set. But if it's just kind of opening up one hole to fill the other, and you're paying a really significant price to get him as a rental, that's a tough set of circumstances for me.
I wrote a deadline primer over at The Athletic, and when you really look at the cap space available to the Canucks, it's pretty slight, right? I mean, they can definitely bring in a mid-range salary. I mean, I even think they could afford to add a Jake Guentzel without subtracting off their roster, although maybe not in terms of meeting the Penguins' requirements for a return. Especially if you're willing to pay for double retention, right? I mean, that's sort of the key here, right? The Canucks probably can get up to 2.5 if they're creative or risky with it, right? If they're willing to play some games down the stretch with 11 forwards, stuff like that, I think you could get to 2.5-ish. But really, it's about $2 million. Guentzel has a $6 million cap hit. Double retention, you can fit that, right? But just, it's tight. Unless you're doing a cash-out, cash-in hockey trade, you know, which brings you to that sort of Garland Mikheyev tier of guy. Additionally, you know, given what we know about how Vancouver values Elias Pettersson, Tom Volander, and Jonathan Lekkarimäki, how excited the club is about getting Lekkarimäki and Elias Pettersson onto the roster in Abbotsford. And one thing to note, because we have some people asking, like Lekkarimäki, because he's on the reserve list as the deadline will expire in a few days, will be eligible to compete in the Stanley Cup playoffs should the club deem him at a level where that's warranted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect it. I think they're going to be very happy to have him down in Abbotsford. And actually, this is one thing that's interesting because it pertains to a guy like Baines, right? Which is Game 7, you know, Baines or DiGiuseppe or Lekkarimäki to play in the lineup. Well, one thing to note is for a young guy in that environment, you're one mistake away from being a household name for the wrong reasons. You know what I mean? I think there's a real understanding that as they develop players for the long term, you know, is it worth taking that risk with a guy who's only going to play 7 minutes for you?
Yeah.
You know, or do you want a guy who's been there before, done it all, you know, has sort of clawed through mud to play professional hockey and continue to earn in this business the way a Phil DiGiuseppe has, right? I mean, that's a real consideration that this team will weight heavily in making some of those bottom of the lineup
decisions. That may be part of the Phil Kessel consideration too, right? Bringing in another guy that you can go to before you have to turn to a Lekkarimäki or a Baines in a situation like that, right?
So eligible but unlikely. What were we talking about? I got
just in general. What I wanted to start getting in on, and you were saying about the cap situation,
right? But then you put together the club's reluctance, you know, and sort of my tiers of things they're reluctant to trade for a trade. Those three prospects that haven't arrived yet, the three Swedish World Junior players, that's like the thing they least want to deal.
Mm-hmm.
Then your 2025 first, they really don't want to trade that, but slightly, very narrowly more open to it than those three prospects. Then you get to the Abbotsford guys, that Ratu, Pod Colson, Baines tier of player, although I'd be shocked if Baines gets moved. And then you get to the roster pieces, you know, and that's sort of why what Dolly Wall and I reported over the weekend, what I reiterated today in the trade deadline primer over at The Athletic is, you know, I kind of think a roster player out is going to be necessary if they're intent on big game hunting this week.
100%, I think.
And they're definitely poking in on it.
Yeah.
You know, I still think probability wise, I'd expect something more mid-range, but they're definitely going to try, especially on a guy like Guentzel.
Guentzel, again, it's just really hard to see how they get it done. Now, some other reports because I find, look, it's not as if they don't get Guentzel, that they're going to stop trying to, one, go bigger game hunting, but two, just in general, upgrade their top six, find other wingers that can help this team. Some other reporting on that from Rick Dhaliwal today said 3 weeks ago thought they weren't interested in Jason Zucker, who, of course, is a pending UFA playing for Arizona, previously played in Pittsburgh. He says 3 weeks ago thought they weren't interested. Now I hear they're poking around. Although he also says that the ask is pretty high, which is surprising to me given Jason Zucker's profile and what he's done for Arizona this year. So I don't really know what the ask is pretty high means in that context. Dhaliwal also saying, doesn't sound like Jordan Greenway is going to happen because the price is high. Again, what does that mean in the context of a player like Jordan Greenway? I'm not exactly sure, but two interesting tidbits there about players they could be interested in and maybe the price being a little bit prohibitive. Now, so I've been really trying to kind of expand my horizons here and think, okay, if it's not Gensel, you know, we've heard Jordan Greenway out there a lot. What are these other targets? Who could they legitimately look at in terms of trying to add a top six winger or a winger with some scoring punch? And of course, Devils GM Tom Fitzgerald yesterday talking after making the change from Lindy Ruff to Travis Green, saying that he's not shopping Tyler Toffoli. They've had extension talks with him, but there's a gap there. But they also could trade him, could easily trade him before the deadline. So I guess Toffoli is kind of on the market, but not like a Jake Gensel situation where it's now the writing is on the wall that they're going to trade him. Because really, the Toffoli one is so interesting. I know you reported the interest and how much weight he holds still with a guy like Elias Pettersson. If you can't get Gensel, and I would think Buchnevich would be in a similar situation where it's the cost is prohibitive.
Buchnevich is probably more expensive because of his contractual situation.
That's the thing. So I don't know if those are the two best wingers on the market. I don't know if either of them is possible because of what it's going to cost to get them. Toffoli is the name that makes the most sense after that to me, right? And again, not that it would be necessarily cheap. He's an extremely productive player. He's a goal scorer. He's got a playoff record. All of those things matter a lot for NHL GMs. But once you start getting beyond that, the market for wingers starts to get pretty thin in terms of guys you look at and think, oh, I'd be really comfortable plugging them into my top six. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's guys that you like. Like, I look at, you go way down the list, like somebody like Anthony Duclair. Because we know Jim Rutherford's history of being attracted to speed, and that's probably, now you're talking about a real kind of mid-level guy. I'd have no problem with that, but are you looking at that and saying, okay, Anthony Duclair, here's a top six spot on this team that wants to go deep into the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Very popular as a teammate, right? By all indications, a great guy. One thing, you know, Duclair's had some injury issues over the last year, but one thing watching the Sharks play, which I certainly did a lot, early in the year, out of like a truly purient, out of almost like a perverse interest, and I've sort of caught them lately as well. His speed looks great. Like, he looks good. He passes any eye test you'd have in terms of the injury concern thing. So I actually like that fit, that target a fair bit from a Canucks perspective. You know, Casey Mittelstadt would be sort of
Casey Mittelstadt,
a name we've
if you're
talked
talking about
a lot.
Big game hunting.
You think he qualifies?
I think he qualifies for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's going to have another 50-point season. He's going to have a 60-point season.
I think that would be a home run acquisition if you do that.
Yeah.
With the cap number he's on right now, you have the flexibility to potentially try to sign him long term. Like,
yep.
That's something where, you know, as you were saying, there's maybe just a sliver of a chance they move that 2025 first. That's the type of player where I think it moves you to put that into consideration.
Anthony Mantha might be a Price is Right target.
Yeah.
I'm really not a fan.
I think once you get past, this is what I was looking at today, and I think once you get past like Gensel, Toffoli, Buchnevich at the top, then you really start to look at what I was thinking was, okay, what are the traits they want? Like, because you're not getting a complete player, like a complete established top six bona fide player.
Speed
at that
and
point.
5-on-5 scoring.
Speed, 5-on-5 scoring, and size.
Yeah.
Right? So that's where Jordan Greenway's name comes in. That's where Brandon Duhaime, although he's not a top six option, but is a bottom of the lineup consideration for you. Yeah, Anthony Duclair. Maybe like an Alex Texier. We've talked about him in the past. But, you know, there's a lot of guys out there like Tarasenko, Jason Zucker, Mike Hoffman. Don't really move the needle. I have a hard time seeing them fitting in. So if you strike out on Toffoli, Gensel, Buchnevich, I don't know. Like, what are the options become pretty limited in a hurry to go out there and add that top six scoring.
Yeah, you get to guys like Kasperi Kapanen, who Rutherford has a long history with, where you think like, okay, you know,
just going back to the well one more time.
Yeah, but you know, with retention, the price is right there, and I guarantee the acquisition price would be. But you're right; you get to the reclamation project here in an awful hurry. Once and by the way, I'd bin Mantha in that tier.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
yeah, and I think Mantha still has a bit of that glow on him, but I think you're doing it because of the size. But again, you're not. That's not a player you're bringing in. And you're gifting or guaranteeing a top six spot and feeling really good about it.
Yeah.
Right?
Kubalik. Yeah, I mean, it gets really tough really fast, without question, for the Canucks. So I think they're going to try and be creative. I still think a scoring winger is their heart's desire. I don't think the door's closed necessarily to adding additional defensive depth. I don't think the door's closed necessarily to targeting size specifically for the lineup. But I think a scoring forward, and my view is a mid-range target is more likely, which isn't to say that it's assured or that I'm predicting it. The Canucks are going to try to do something impactful if they can, if it makes sense. And we'll see. The Guentzel bidding is going to be fascinating to watch and may come to a head over the next 24 hours.
What do you think about the Zucker potential fit? He's a player I've really liked in the past. If this was 4 years ago and a team was talking about acquiring him, I think I'd be really excited about it. Now, I don't know.
I agree with you that I don't know. I think the fact of the matter is that he's had durability issues relatively repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like just looking at his games played, 41, 38, 70. You know, that was sort of the 3 years leading into a really strong bounce back season for him in Pittsburgh last year, which earned him the deal in Arizona. He's been healthy this year. You know, I think there's a sense that some of that speed, which, I mean, there was a time where Zucker was like one of this league's best pure skaters and used it to attack so chaotically. It was a real favorite of mine in some of his wild seasons. You know, I don't know. I struggle to imagine that Zucker moves the needle at this stage of his career for what the Canucks are looking for. But if they're just looking for another shot at having a guy that can help them generate real chances 5-on-5, I do think he fits the bill if the price
is right. It feels a little bit like a Phil Kessel situation. Not that, you know, he's playing in the league right now, right? So it's different from that perspective. But as that kind of profile of a guy who has the track record, you know, had that speed profile, but if you're counting on him to be like a fixture for you, that's going to be a problem. And I think that's probably where Phil Kessel lands at about this stage as well. I know Rick Dolliwell also was reporting on Kessel, by the way. Decision coming soon. They're in a holding pattern right now. Of course, that's something they have to get done if they want him to figure into the playoffs by the trade deadline. So that has to come to a head this week one way or the other.
And I don't think I really struggle to imagine that you would not want him signed before the deadline to avoid burning a call up on a look,
right?
You know, the stakes are still there's still too many things that have real stakes for the Canucks over the balance of the season for them to be like chill, you know, in terms of how they manage those four recalls, how much cap space they have to yep. fit the requisite bodies into the lineup. I really struggle to imagine this team wanting to play or even being willing to play a man short in some of these games down the stretch, given the quality of their opponents.
And it gets complicated in a hurry, right? If you're adding Kessel, you're doing it before the deadline, and not like signing him, and as you said, adding him to the roster, right? To avoid burning one of those call-ups.
Because so that then requires a roster spot.
You have to have a roster spot. If you're bringing someone in, then you have to open up another additional roster spot, right? It's a salary cap consideration. It gets really complicated in a hurry.
Only Pod Colson is waiver exempt, right? And that might be the other, like another sign or just like a thing to monitor, like for the sake of flexibility, roster flexibility in terms of targeting bigger pieces. You know, one thing to watch for over the course of this week is going to be, are they willing to waive Nils Amon mm-hmm. and Mark Friedman, right? Because that impacts your roster spots, obviously, but that also impacts your cap space, the available cap space to you. You know, I think if they're looking at, you know, some of these deals that get a little larger, right? A $6 million guy, even with 50% retained, is $3 million. Well, that's going to require some roster flexibility to make it work. Like, one thing to watch in terms of adjudicating the Canucks' posture as this week unfolds is, are they willing to waive those guys, and do they in fact hit waivers, whether or not they're reassigned, simply so the club has that option in their back pocket in the lead up to the deadline? I wouldn't be shocked either way. I think the club it values the depth contributions of both players. Nils Amon, they spent a lot of time like structuring a contract to make it as likely to clear as possible. That's not an accident. So, you know, I don't think that those decisions would be made lightly, but it would be an interesting, like, indicator light right? That the club is maybe on the verge of doing something a little bigger.
Jeff in East Hill says, boys, what about Frank Vetrano? Vetrano having a fantastic year down in Anaheim. He has term left on his deal, so it's not as if they have to trade him. We talked to Shane earlier, and you were saying you picked that they wouldn't trade him, that they just hold on to him. I like Vetrano. I think it would be a real test of how much do they value the scoring pop versus the size acquisition, right? Because they already have Garland and Hoglander. He'd be another undersized player. Gensel's the same, but Gensel has the playoff track record and the track record in Pittsburgh specifically. So Vetrano,
a different level of player.
Exactly, right.
You know,
I feel like Vetrano would almost be more interesting to the Canucks if he was a rental. Right. If you're like, whatever, hey, let's just take a shot on him for the playoffs and we're not committed to him beyond this year versus are we going to bring in a player? We don't necessarily like that archetype, but we're going to be married to him beyond this year. You know,
I think it's a good point. I also think it would be different, perhaps, if it was like Hoglander and Garland that were the expiring guys and Joshua who had term remaining.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, because that's a lot of undersized kind of middle sixy guys in your lineup going into next year.
Yeah. I like Vetrano a lot, but I would be surprised. Also, here's the thing. What's the impetus for the Ducks to do it?
That's the thing.
You have to pry him out.
Well, I guess the impetus would be he's having a career year. So do you sell when he's having a career year?
Except that he's such a consistent 5-on-5 scorer, right? And whose scoring blow-up isn't connected to anything other than a super reliable amount of power play time, a steady diet of power play time, which you can control. Right? I mean, it's not like Vetrano's shooting 17%. You know, it's more about opportunity. This is a super consistent guy, right? I mean, you'd struggle to find the last time that he hasn't been on a 25-plus goal pace over 82 games, and that's usually been with, like, third-line ice time, right? I mean, if the Ducks are going to give him opportunity and play him with Troy Terry with any regularity, I don't think you need to look at this as the peak of his value necessarily. So I would expect that to be an expensive deal if you're trying to swing it.
Yeah, and I think based on the expense, what it might cost, and based on him not really fitting maybe the long-term profile for the Canucks, I'd be surprised if Frank Vetrano was an option. But you never know, because one thing we do know about Jim Rutherford, Patrick Alvin, they're going to try to do something. They're going to explore every option ahead of the noon deadline on Friday. It is a Canucks game day. They're playing the LA Kings. We will hear from Rick Tocchet. We can look forward to the game a little bit more, and just kind of generally the playoff picture and the lay of the land in the Western Conference and the Pacific Division. As mentioned earlier in the show, Vegas losing to Columbus last night. What's going on with the Golden Knights?
Just a little bit of news, very minor, but as of 24 minutes ago, Carson Soucy has been activated.
So
Carson Soucy fully on the 23-man roster. Good to go tonight. Tocchet had already confirmed that, but he's in fact been formally activated by the club.
We'll hear from Rick Tocchet. Final segment coming up here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
You want me to think that you're vile?
Oh, welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here on a Canucks game day. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. Tune in on Trade Deadline Day to Sportsnet 650's coverage brought to you by AJ's Pizza on East Broadway in Mount Pleasant. Try AJ's traditional New York pizza or sink into their famous Detroit pizza only at AJ's Pizza. Order online at AJS.pizza.
You know what I like to eat AJ's Pizza?
What?
Watching March Madness basketball.
Yes. Dom, don't try to get us in trouble.
All love college basketball.
We all love college hoops. I'm actually going to be in the States for the first weekend of March Madness. I'm very excited.
That's electric.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like that.
Why not?
Because my gambling apps, I like to use the ones in BC, mostly our partners at Play Now Sports, but also other ones that I can't access in the States.
Well, you got to set up an account down there, man.
No, the key is to have the offsite EU.
Just look. Just find a professional athlete, get him to give you the password to his account. I think they have no problem with that, right?
I've heard Shane Pinto, his account.
He's open for business.
Yeah.
Wow, that's... I'm trying to get us in trouble again.
Yep, seriously. Big can of beans here.
Anyways, I'm looking forward to it. But we won't talk college hoops, lest we incur the wrath of the inbox here.
We'll eventually do it before the
madness. Sure, at some point.
We'll probably, like, draft...
You're both in
March
for
Madness teams.
The 650 Madness pool.
Yeah, course. Oh yeah, I'll be in for sure. As mentioned, it is the Canucks game day. They're taking on the LA Kings. Let's hear from head coach Rick Tocchet.
Excited for another crack at the Kings?
Yeah, I mean, these are competitive games now coming down the stretch. You know, like to see how the team plays in this environment. Kings are on a bit of a roll, so it's a good test for us.
What did you learn in terms of what adjustments you need to make after the last game?
Yeah, I just say our resolve. I think, you know, when we got a little frustrated, they didn't. And when we got frustrated, we gave them a breakaway and a couple of two-on-ones. I think that's really the difference. So if things don't go your way, you just can't, you know, we talked about it. You can't just push your chips in and, you know, lose yourself or lose your system because something doesn't go right. So I think the last game against Anaheim maybe helps us a little bit that we can play a 2-1 hockey game and, you know, just grind it out. Sometimes you have to do that in today's game.
When they're dictating the pace of play and putting you in that position where you do get frustrated, is that just a mental thing that you've got to have the guys leaning on each other to get out of it?
Yeah, I don't even think it's pace of play. I don't think it was like when we played them, it wasn't the pace. It was more they were just comfortable playing that style, and we weren't. And then really, when it comes down to it, there's a lot of opportunities where it's 50-50 puck battles, and they came up more with puck battles. So you can diagram all you want, but if you don't win puck battles, it doesn't matter what system you play. So I think you know, you're looking for a spirited, gritty performance from our team tonight.
Quinn said after the Anaheim game that he talked about redeeming themselves against LA. Do you like the guys are thinking about what happened on Thursday?
Excuse me. Yeah. Yes, as a team, 100%. But even as an individual, if you didn't like your game, do something about it. I like that when guys are, you know, listen, being a good hockey player is self-evaluation of your game and how do you become better. So I think a lot of guys in that LA game weren't happy with their play, whether it was, you know, the battle or being in the wrong spot or just not being engaged. I think getting back to your game as quick as possible is a good thing.
All those years you played, I know you know what it's like as a player to be in deadline week.
Yeah.
Can it be a distraction that bothers some guys more than others?
Yeah, I think that's what it's about. It's to each his own. Like, it's hard to explain. Some guys it doesn't bother. Some guys, you know, it takes them a couple of weeks even before they start thinking about it. It's in their head, even if you read something about it. So, yeah, I've been on teams where it three or four guys, you can tell it affects their play. So, but I think, like Crosby said it the other night, he said, you know, it's the same thing every game. It doesn't really matter. You know, it is what it is, and you just try to play through it. So it's the same thing with us. I haven't really heard much in that dressing room people talk about it, so maybe hopefully it doesn't bother any guys.
This is a challenging stretch coming up, the next four games against some of the top teams in the West. Do you want your players looking at these games as measuring stick type contests, or do you want them to just kind of treat them like any other game?
I don't know if it's a measuring stick. I think it's more we want to play get to our game, you know. I'm a 90% worried about us, 10% the other team. Yeah, the other 10%, you got to strategize. This team does this. This team does that. But when it comes to it, we have to have our game in shape. Whether you play LA, Winnipeg, Vegas, all good teams, all very structured, got great players, have had success. So whether it's a measuring stick against the team or yourself, you just got to be able to show resolve against these teams and not get frustrated.
Will Soucy draw in and will Demko start?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Those are the two changes. Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah.
All right, that is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet, and normally we would react to a little bit about what Rick Tocchet had to say, but while we were playing that audio, your Athletic colleague Chris Johnston with a fascinating, fascinating tweet. Here it is. With the Canucks believed to be among those pursuing Jake Gensel, Word is they've had discussions about potentially flipping Elias Lindholm to the Bruins as part of the machinations to make it happen. Nothing concrete in place at this time. Still lots of moving parts. That is a bombshell report from Chris Johnston.
It is a bombshell report that underlines a couple of things, right? One is, LOL, the Canucks are hilarious.
I'm so here for it.
Yeah, me too. But they're funny.
Oh, yeah.
This is a high comedy. Secondly, you know, there has been some internal disappointment about Lindholm's performance. The fact of the matter is that they got him to punch up their top six, and that just hasn't happened. Not that he's played poorly, although he hasn't played great, but he hasn't fit to sort of be that missing piece scoring forward type that they were hoping to get. You know, he hasn't really been enabled... upgrades on either special teams unit either the way we expected him to in terms of the fit side of this. Now, I guess what this comes down to is at the end of the day, Rutherford usually gets his guy. Right?
And well, think back to the reporting that you did and what we heard after the Lindholm trade. Stay on it. Right? That was his message to Patrick Alvin, and it was, we're going to jump the market. We're going to do, you know what? We're going to put in that extra little bit of value that enables us to go get this done well in advance, right? So that is absolutely a regular part of his MO. Go, I have this target in mind. I see how it fits. I want to go get it done.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the cost can get prohibitive. Now, we'll see how this unfolds. Clearly, this is a deeply active situation. I'd imagine we'll start to hear rumblings. If there's real momentum on something like this, you'll start to hear rumblings that, like, teams are out, right? Because it takes a long time to do these sorts of deals. If you don't want to trade your 2025 first, but you can recoup a pick for Lindholm from Boston, which
and
also...
Boston, should be noted, long-time rumored Lindholm suitor, both in terms of trade market
and as
UFA this year, right? And what does Boston love to do? Trade for guys at the deadline and then extend them.
Yeah. And now Boston has its own cap space concerns here, right? So, again, this kind of runs a little complicated, but if you're able to get, say, a first plus for Lindholm... Which, given that you paid a first plus,
you should. And I know they brought this up. Donnie and Dolly brought this up on their show this morning, and you know, Donnie brought it up and said, like, "What do you think? Is there a possibility they could flip Lindholm?" And Rick was saying, like, "Wow, who would take him? He's not scoring." I said, "Well, he wasn't really scoring in Calgary either, and there was still a very healthy trade market for him. So I don't think this month, in a Canucks uniform, has cratered his value much.
He's been playing with, like, AHL additions.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think there's lots of teams that would have the same opinion of Lindholm as they had a month ago and might view this as an opportunity to buy low on a guy that just moved. You know, so if you can get a first, though, like one premium asset to flesh out a deal, you know what I mean, that you then ship to Boston... Almost like the Hronek first.
To Pittsburgh.
Right,
right. You do a two-step thing here.
Presumably with, you know, like a Hoglander-quality guy, like a Hoglander-quality asset. Could that get it done? But then you're losing multiple guys off your roster.
Yes. At that point, yeah, man. I mean, so much depends on what you're getting back from Boston in terms of... And how close is that value to whatever you need to do for Gensel? Because you're right. If you're doing Lindholm and Hoglander off your roster, that's a big pill to swallow. If it's just whatever you get for Lindholm and then stuff in the AHL, you know, even Pod Coles and things like that, then I think it's okay. You can see how that's an upgrade, right? Because they have the depth at center with Suter and Bluger. There's been some disappointment with Lindholm. I don't think it's entirely fair, right? Given that he's bounced around the lineup so much, like, I can still easily see a path to Lindholm being a really important contributor for this team in the playoffs. I don't think that ship has sailed, but I also understand why they'd be looking to do the upgrade. It's just, if you're talking Lindholm and another forward, as we were saying earlier in the show, right, your forward depth has already been kind of undercut pretty significantly over the course of this season. How much more can you afford to whittle away at it, even if you are bringing in, you know, the best player currently on the market in the form of Jake Gensel?
Yeah, and we'll see where this goes. But if it's getting reported by the likes of CJ, you can imagine there's at least some real momentum here.
Yeah, it's just a fascinating one. And I mean, somebody texted in here It was Jay in Calgary who says, this is why it's great having Rutherford as president more than anything else. LOL from Jay in Calgary. And I mean, I have to agree, like, we'll see how it works out. And it's going to be fascinating if this does happen. And it's just being reported by CJ, not that it has happened, but that they've had discussions with the Bruins about potentially flipping Elias Lindholm as part of going out and trying to get Jake Guentzel. It's going to be fascinating to hear what the management group has to say about this series of transactions. Now, this would be on a much, much higher scale, but of course, we remember the example of Pittsburgh acquiring Tanner Pearson and then trading him later that year to the Canucks for Eric Goodbranson, right? So again, this all fits into the kind of hyper-aggressive, not afraid to make transactions. If something doesn't work, that's fine. Move on from it. Try to fix it. Try to go get a better option. It's part of the MO of Jim Rutherford. It has been in the past.
Yeah. And again, you know, from what I was hearing and what the Canucks don't want to trade, right, what they're really reluctant to part with, you know, my thought, well, not my thought, what I was hearing was mid-range targets are more likely, but the club was always going to do their best to get as creative as mm-hmm. possible to land a top six scoring forward. And Guentzel is one of one relative to the other options on the market.
100%.
You know, the fact that this possibility is even a consideration, I think, testament to the creativity and aggression of the front office. But obviously,
and the sense of need, I would say,
yeah,
also.
Right. It's going to require a lot to actually get that over the line, right? Like, to get that over the line and done is going to require a lot and probably come at a significant cost. So, fascinating amount of activity ahead of the deadline.
Lots of text and reaction coming in here. This one, unsigned. Sorry, it's from Ryan in Penticton. As disappointing as Lindholm has been, does subtracting him off the roster to add Guentzel really profile as a huge improvement? Guentzel isn't a right shot center and doesn't kill penalties. I definitely think, look, Guentzel's a better player, and Guentzel does move the needle more specifically in that area of 5-on-5 scoring pop, somebody to potentially play with Pedersen. So you have these two pretty formidable duos at the top of your lineup, right, in JT Miller and Brock Besser, and then, hypothetically speaking, if this were to happen, Elias Pettersson and Jake Guentzel. So I do think it makes you better, with the caveat that I said of what else are you removing from your roster. But it's a good point from Ryan and Penticton that, you know, Rick Tocchet, even with Lindholm struggling a little bit since he's gotten here, has still generally been pretty high on his defensive game. You know, we've seen him use him out there in key defensive zone draws. He's been on the penalty kill, albeit not with fantastic results so far. So you are, yes, it's an upgrade on the player, again, in this hypothetical being reported as a possibility by Chris Johnston, but you are subtracting some value from other areas, in particular the penalty kill and just defensively and at center, right? It limits your flexibility a little bit. It probably takes the lotto line off of the table if you want to go to that at some point, because you don't have that clear-cut second-line center. It stretches your center depth a little bit more thin if you go out and make that type of trade. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This one comes in, not surprised by this, not a fit based on the lineup makeup, and was insurance for PD leaving. And somebody else texts in, maybe Lindholm was a Pettersson safety net after all. I don't know about that, because we've heard really from, I think, the day they made the trade that, yes, they would be open to extending Lindholm, but that they're also perfectly comfortable looking at him as a pure rental player, right? So I never really bought into the Lindholm is Pettersson insurance thing, just because there's such a gulf between the two players. And if your plan is, oh, we'll just replace Elias Pettersson with Elias Lindholm, that's a really, really dangerous plan. So I don't know if that makes it easier for them to do. I think it's probably just, man, we really need to generate more at 5-on-5 from our top six. And yeah, we wanted Lindholm for his penalty killing. Yeah, we wanted him for his defensive effort. But we also wanted him to be a running mate for some guys in our top six, and that hasn't really happened. 650-650, Tanbeer, I love this one. He says, are the Canucks keeping the big teams in the West from getting Lindholm and Guentzel? Is hilarious, no? That is very funny, I have to say, right? Teams are in on Lindholm. It's like, no, we got him. Now we're trading him to the East, potentially, and we're going and getting Jake Guentzel, who the teams in the Western Conference are in on as well.
Coming up the trade market through raw aggression. You love to see it.
Pure churn. We're just going to make so many trades. Everyone's going to come through Vancouver. Then we're going to trade them to other teams that don't threaten us. It's a fascinating approach to the trade market. Fascinating approach to the trade market by the Canucks.
Yeah, it's all fun and games until like Sean Monahan ends up being the nut cards. What?
Indeed.
I'm just saying, like, you can't predict who matters.
No, that's true.
You know, or, I mean, you can, obviously, but, like, it's hard. I hated the Monahan trade when the Jets did it. He's got 8 goals in 12 games.
He is fit in really, really well.
I loved the Lindholm trade for the Canucks. He's got 4 goals.
It hasn't worked out that well.
Only in 2 games.
I still, like...
Since his acquisition.
And I want to be clear. I'm not saying that it would be categorically the wrong move for the Canucks to trade Lindholm. But I also don't buy into this idea that, like, oh, it's just not a fit. That there's no future where he can really help this team. I absolutely think that's the case. And I completely understand the team's concerns and disappointment about him not helping the top six. But, I mean, what's the longest stretch he's gone with having the same line mates? Like 2 games? If that, realistically?
Oh, yeah, maybe 3 because he played with Baines and Garland 2 in a row. Yeah, maybe 2.
You know what I mean?
He's been bumped around a lot.
He's been bumped around a lot. At a certain point, you got to put a guy in a position to succeed. Or you got to lean into, okay, we're not getting the offense for him, but let's at least lean into the defensive part of his game and use him in that role and not be disappointed then that he's not driving offense. So, look, we'll see. I mean, this is such a complicated maneuver to pull off that as exciting as this report is, if I had to bet right now, I'd probably bet on Lindholm still being here past the deadline, although you never know. But I do think there's a path forward still for Elias Lindholm. This one, Todd Has Bad Takes says, guys, you're killing me. My work production this week is not looking good. I mean, this is just like the perfect little amuse-bouche for trade deadline.
I would say this is more than an amuse-bouche. This
I guess.
Like,
it's just because it's on Tuesday. I mean, sorry. It's like so early in the courses. You know what I mean?
You know what this is? This is like a Costco sample, but like not one that's like, here's our new yogurt, you know, but like one that's like meat, like
Some sort of
fried good.
Cured meat.
Yeah, cured meat. Like, literally, there's, like, an absolute scrum around the poor sampler person. You know what I mean? And you know that everyone who tries it's buying some.
I just want to point out that directly translated, which I know you're not supposed to, but you're saying this Lindholm report amuses the mouth.
Yeah, that's what an amuse-bouche is.
An amuse-bouche, yeah.
Yeah, it's an appetizer.
Yeah.
Well, it's like
even it's like a pre-appetizer.
Yeah, okay, like a hors d'oeuvre. Almost.
No, now, I would say an hors d'oeuvre is an appetizer. An hors d'oeuvre is like what you carry around on plates, right?
It's an amuse-bouche.
No, an amuse-bouche.
It's separate. They're different.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you would know. You live in West.
I would say an appetizer is more like a canapé, you know?
These French words for food.
This is, of course, we sprung into action reacting to the big Elias Lindholm.
And then immediately sprung out of action thinking about little treats.
Debating the different names for little treats.
Amuses the
mouth.
This
like a dim sum dish? Or yeah. Is that what we're talking about here?
What's your dim sum amuse-bouche? Your first thing you want to get at dim sum.
Steamed pork buns.
Oh, yeah. I like those.
I like those
in the middle. I like those in the middle. Those are my favorite thing.
The best thing.
I want those in the middle before I'm like too full. But no, there's got to be the fried shrimp roll.
Also really good.
Really good.
You had me at fried. Yeah. I was like, all right, I'm in. Brandon in Vancouver says, Lindholm only works if you reunite the Lotto line and have him run his own line as a matchup center. I wouldn't say that's the only way it works. I will say, I think a big part of the attraction to getting another center was to allow you to use the Lotto line in certain situations, or at least for certain games. And we haven't seen that, right? They haven't really taken advantage of that. Instead, what they've decided to do with Lindholm in the lineup is use him as the third line center, which, as I said, seems kind of incompatible with being upset that he hasn't juiced your top six scoring, because you're mostly using him as a third line center. So you're not really putting him in a position to do that. Look, even the day that Rick Tocchet put the Lotto line together, we heard from him that this probably was not going to be a long-term thing. It was going to be situational. I agree that with Lindholm in the fold, it probably has to be, if not your first option, plan B, something that you were willing to try. But there does seem to be reluctance from the Canucks to use it for any significant length of time. We saw a really impressive run of games. They petered out a little bit to the end of those games. And we haven't really seen the Lotto line other than a shift or two here or there since then. So as much logical sense as it makes to me looking at the lineup, it doesn't seem to be a first choice or even a second choice option for for the Canucks at this point. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This one says, why is this a surprise? You mentioned this many times. When Rutherford was hired, Drantz, he moves off guys that don't work immediately. That's true, but it's still a surprise. When you go out and you give up that type of package for a player before the trade deadline, and everyone loves the deal, and we're all really excited to see how it fits, it would still be a massive surprise. This is a lot different than moving on from Tanner Pearson at that stage of his career in season. I can't remember the last time we would have seen something like this in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, this qualified as like a deadline. Like, in the future, assuming Lindholm does not get traded before the deadline, we will look back and categorize Lindholm as a deadline deal.
Yes.
You know, like, I've never seen a deadline. I've never seen a signature deadline deal.
Yeah, no, like,
reverse this
first
quickly.
Round plus given up for
plus,
this
plus,
player.
Plus.
And then they might get flipped. Even for...
Because there were four assets.
Yeah.
Kuzmenko was in that deal.
Even for an executive with the history of aggression.
Yeah, this
all
is...
All of that. This is a step above.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not saying bonkers pejoratively. Like, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's just bonkers.
No, and I would say...
Value neutral.
I mean, in general, like, I think NHL teams should be more bonkers.
Heck yeah.
And not just because I love talking about the bonkers moves.
Certainly makes for a good segment.
It does make for a
boy.
Very good, exciting segment. All right. I think we're going to wrap it up there. Somebody liked our Costco analogy, though. So that's nice. Or your Costco analogy. I guess I can't.
No, we're a team.
Yeah.
Everything I do, you get credit for.
I don't know if to be delighted or horrified by that.
Yeah, both.
All right.
In equal measure.
We'll wrap it up there. I'm sure there will be big reaction to this coming up. What were you going to say?
No, just,
oh, nothing.
I mean,
okay.
it's a good day when you have a potential three-way.
All right.
And well, amuses the mouth.
And
canapes for all.
We will end on that note. We'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy the game. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.